straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 292, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden. I'm joined here by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, the madness is upon us, and we've already had Seth Davis, and we already had the illustrious Chris Budden, and now we get the preeminent authority on college basketball at the worldwide leader, ESPN, Jay Billis. Such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. How are you today, Jay?
I'm doing great. I hope you guys are too.
Man, we're just all excited here. I'm sure you're existing on like 3 hours sleep a night because you're ubiquitous. Everywhere we turn, we see you.
Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, it's a time for less sleep, but you're energized at the same time. It's a good time of year.
It is the most fun. It's the one event in America that never lets us down. I mean, the Oscars are bad and sometimes the Super Bowl's bad, but the March Madness is wonderful. Texas is the sexy pick in Bristol, and you have them in your Final Four. What is it about these Longhorns that has people excited and basically ensuring that they don't get there?
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of the thing. I mean, I don't know when at least the job that I'm supposed to be doing became picking teams, because, you know, when I first started, I was called a color commentator, and now I'm an analyst. And they want you to tell people who's going to win. Well, I can tell you what the game, you know, what's important and what the game's going to be decided on. But if I knew who was going to win, I'd be in Vegas sitting by the pool at a fancy hotel with a drink in my hand, you know, raking in cash. But I think one of the reasons that Texas is so appealing, one, they got a pretty decent draw. I mean, Colgate's not an easy team to play against, but Texas is significantly better. Colgate can really move the ball, and they have five guys that average in double figures, and they shoot it well, and they're very well coached. So, you know, it's one of those games that if you overlook them, they can beat you. But if Texas is locked in, I don't see any way that they drop a game to Colgate. But, you know, the draw is good. I think it's a good region. There's nobody in that region on the bottom half of the bracket that I think that Texas can't handle, because the Longhorns defend at a high level, and they've got, I think the fact that Tyrese Hunter's starting to play better and score again, and then Timmy Allen's supposed to be healthy, but the big guys have really started to play well, especially Dylan Dessou. As you guys know, when he was at Vanderbilt, he was leading the SEC in rebounding when he got injured. And I thought last year he didn't look like the player that I saw before, and he looks like that now. And so there are a whole bunch of reasons, but, you know, these are just educated guesses more than anything. But if Texas is able to get through to, you know, the Elite Eight and have to play a team like Houston, that's going to be a fist fight of a game. But I think as good as Houston is, and I think they're legit, Texas scores a little bit easier. And at that stage of the tournament, I think being able to make shots from multiple positions is going to be helpful.
Well, we all know it's always about guards this time of year, and Texas has a bunch of them. Marcus Carr's been in a shooting slump, kind of got out of it in the championship game against Kansas in Kansas City. Do you worry about him? Because he is the heart and soul of this team, even though, you know, Tyrese Hunter, as you said, has improved and gotten on his game, and Jabari Rice, his status as sixth man is very distinctive and noteworthy.
I don't worry too much about Marcus Carr because he's just a natural scorer, and he does adjust that if he's not hitting his perimeter shot, he can get to the basket and he gets to the free throw line. He's just a bucket getter. I can never figure out hot versus not. And, you know, how do slumps begin? When do they begin? And then how do they end? You know, whether it's a hitter in baseball or a shooter. You don't stop swinging, you don't stop shooting. So, and I know Marcus isn't going to stop shooting. So, I'm not particularly worried about that. And especially in these games, these are more possession oriented games in the tournament. The breaks are really long. Seems like every commercial is like 5 minutes long. That's why the coaches all have a little committee meeting outside of their huddle. Cause they're like, we don't have 5 minutes of content. Let's just talk to each other. And then we'll talk to them for a minute and a half.
That makes sense. Big 12, banner year for the league, and every game seemed to be great. We saw a lot of games being where we live, and I know you saw a few. I know it's not football where, like in SEC, teams can literally beat each other up over the year and then be vulnerable in the postseason. What's the fine line between being battle-tested and being kind of worn out by the grind that is a Big 12 schedule?
I don't know. I've not seen, I can't recall a league quite like the Big 12 was this year, where there didn't seem to be a bottom in the league. And there were no layup games. Like, even the teams that had poor records in conference, whether it was Texas Tech or Oklahoma, even West Virginia didn't have a great conference record. They're good. And going to their place and trying to win is really hard, and they're just hard to beat, period. There were no layups in the league. I don't think the top of the league is necessarily the best I've ever seen. It's not like I'd say I'd put this league up against, the Big East in the 80s or the ACC in the 80s and 90s or whatever, or even more vintage. I don't see that. You just saw unusual quality throughout the league. Top to bottom. And so when you get to the tournament, there's a part of me that thinks that the Big 12 teams that made it, the seven, all say, all right, now we get some fresh meat, that people that don't know us so well and don't know our game so well. So maybe it'll be easier. Some of this stuff, I think, tends to be backward looking. In other words, you go into the tournament, you lose, and then, well, we were tired. When I played, and this is a million years ago, we were the number one overall seed. We won, going into the championship game, we'd won 37 games, and we had a brutal physical game against number two Kansas in the seven national semifinals. It's Final Four. And then we wound up getting clipped by a bucket by Louisville in the championship game. And afterwards, people were saying, well, the Duke team was a little tired and all that stuff. And, I guess you're looking for excuses, but I said, every win we had, nobody said we were tired, but we won. It's only when we lose that people say, well, we were tired or this or that. Nobody ever said that when we won. And some of these games, we only won by one or two baskets. So I'm not sure about that. I don't think the one good thing about this season and sort of playing now is the technology and the rest and recovery for these players is better than it's ever been. And rest and recovery didn't exist when I played, and nutrition and all that stuff. These guys, they do more, they have more capacity. And so I'm not as concerned about tired. Injury is different, but tired, I'm not concerned about.
Yeah. To me, tired may be a factor if you lost by 20 or something like that.
Yeah,
but you lose
on
a last second shot, it makes no sense. When you look on paper, is Alabama look like the most superior team in the country, Jay? And the whole distractions, could that come back up now that the national is just focusing on these next 3 weeks?
I don't know. I mean, it's obviously a tragic situation, and they have had it surrounding the program for a period of time now. It'll certainly grow a little louder at the Final Four or in the NCAA tournament. But they had a taste of it, of sort of the questions and things that may be asked. There's nothing they can answer. It's a no comment answer, and that would be, that's the smart way to handle it, and the only way to handle it. But they dealt with a little bit of the SEC tournament. Doesn't seem to be affecting them on the court.
Sure doesn't.
They're probably the most talented team out there. They're young, but their youth hasn't shown up to me anyway. I had their game at Houston where they were, if I remember right, they were down 17 early in the second half. And I was kind of thinking, and I actually said to my broadcast partner at the time, I said, this is going to get away from Alabama. And they went with a smaller lineup, and they, kind of bowed up and came back and won the game. And, for people that reflexively say, well, young team, that's going to show up in postseason. It hasn't shown up yet. And and there are a lot of older teams that fold in those situations. So I'm not particularly worried about that. But, you know, I think they have, of the number one seeds, Alabama's got the easiest path.
Mm-hmm. I know people out there listening are going, please ask Jay Billis what his Final Four is so I can copy him and then get mad at him when it doesn't happen. Arizona, Texas, Duke, and UConn. Of those three, I haven't seen UConn. What about them intrigues you?
UConn has tremendous size. So they've got two big guys, Adama Sanogo and Donovan Clingan. And Clingan's a freshman, about 7 feet tall. And they've got really athletic wings. And they've got a great shooter in Jordan Hawkins. They really have everything you need, except, you know, their point guard is a guy named Tristan Newton, who's had a triple-double this year. He transferred in from East Carolina, and he's really good. But he's been the thing that everybody's pointed to. They don't have a natural point guard, you know, point guard play, this kind of thing. Guy's got a triple-double. I don't know what they want him to do. But he – that I think if UConn, they're going to have some challenges. Like, they play Iona in the first game. And I really like UConn's team. That's why I picked them for the Final Four. But when you really look at the bracket, they do have some stumbling blocks. Like, Iona has elite guard play, especially for the Metro Atlantic Conference. And they've got size. They've got a guy at 7'4" on their team. Wow. that plays. And their wings are athletic, and they press. So, you know, their pressure, full court pressure, could negate UConn's big guys inside. And, you know, UConn hasn't won consistently in the tournament over the last several years. So it's not like they're going in with a lot of tournament experience to rely upon. I still like them. There's a chance that they could play VCU in the second round, another team that would press. So there are some hurdles there for UConn. But if they get past that, you know, they might play UCLA or Gonzaga. And I just like them. I like them having a chance. And I decided this year, all of us were talking about, oh, it's going to be a crazy tournament. And I didn't think the conference tournaments were that crazy.
No,
but yeah, there's a lot of chalk in those, but I thought, you know what, go away from the one seeds and the two seeds. And let's pick the teams you think, okay, I really like this team all year. They're seated lower than I expected, but I still like them. So I decided to get a little more adventurous.
I love that.
You know, coaches' careers can be made in this tournament. As you know, Texas picked Tom Penders out of Rhode Island after he made a run. Rick Barnes out of Clemson, when he made a run, got to San Antonio. Rodney Terry is kind of in limbo. He's in a state of flux for Texas. He's done a magnificent job, as you know. Do you think he's done enough to earn the job, or do you think Texas is smart and waiting, since he was 0-1 in NCAA play in 10 years? At UTEP and Fresno State?
I think things have changed. It used to be, and in my position, I don't feel like TV analysts should be stumping for people to get jobs or all that, because I have heard people do that. And I've heard people say, well, he's earned the job. Right. And I love Rodney Terry. I think he's fantastic. I just don't think being an interim coach for anyone earns you the job. It is the job. Your job was to step in there and do the job. For any program, and right now we're talking about Texas, the main thing is to get the right person for the future of the program. And if that's Rodney, great. Right. If it's not, you have to go in that direction. This is a multi-billion dollar business. And, you know, I mean, this is not a perfect analogy, but I mean, if you're on a cruise ship and the captain gets sick and the first mate has to take over and gets you back into the harbor, you don't just automatically make him the captain for the next voyage. But it doesn't preclude you from doing that either. So it's kind [S2] Right. [S1] Of a mealy-mouthed way of saying if Rodney's the best person, hire that person. It's not for me to say, but I do believe that you know, Texas should look at everything. Like anybody would. I mean, you know, I think any of us in that position would do that. It's not about making somebody feel good for doing a good job. It's about getting the best person.
like you say, it's not a, shouldn't be a reward. It should be who's the best man for the job the next 10 years.
Yeah, and he's provided some pretty good evidence that he could be that. Right. Absolutely.
That is a great analogy. I wanted to ask you a little bit, and a lot of this thing around Rodney Terry is, you know, Chris Beard put this team together. Rodney Terry helped him recruit, but this is Chris Beard's team that he constructed, and it's a veteran team. So guys are leaving, and the big question with Rodney, can you bring back other guys like this? Now you played, now when we were young, Jay, and we had hair, and this was the 80s, love the 80s. You were on that 86 team that made it to the title game. Senior Jay Billis, junior Johnny Dawkins, senior Mark Allery, and you had some pups. You had Quinn Snyder, you had Danny Ferry, both freshmen, and Johnny Dawkins was a senior. So good mix. But nowadays, this transfer portal, more older guys are taking up these spots. Are these young guys, and I'm not talking about the one and done, I'm talking about these young freshmen that grow into the position, like Quinn Snyder. He grew into a really good college player. Are they going to be falling through the cracks with this transfer portal, keeping these older guys around for much longer?
Yes and no. So as you mentioned, that was a different time back then when most freshmen came to college. They didn't expect to play right away. You felt like you might have to serve a little bit of an internship behind an older player, established player. And so if you didn't start as a freshman, it wasn't the end of the world. You know, the guys you mentioned that were seniors then, Mark Allery, Johnny Dawkins, David Henderson, myself, we all started as freshmen, but we started as freshmen because the team wasn't that good. Mm-hmm. And so we all started. But now I think what you'll see happen is because it's so valuable to be able to bring in an experienced transfer, you'll probably see more freshmen, not all of them, but more freshmen that will go to a place where they can play, and then they'll transfer to somebody somewhere else that they really wanted to be.
That makes sense. I
think that'll happen. It's not going to be every player. You'll still have the super talented guys as freshmen that are going to go wherever they want and play right away. But I think, you know, you guys see it with Jabari Rice. You know, he was at New Mexico State. And one of the great things about the transfer portal, look, like a schlep like me that watches nothing but basketball, I saw Jabari Rice play, mm-hmm. but most people didn't. And he had the opportunity to leave and play on a bigger stage. And now everybody in the country knows who he is and knows he's got the best shot fake in America and all that stuff. It's, you know, coaches have done it forever. You know, a smaller school do well, jump up to the bigger school, make more money. Everybody knows who they are. You know, they got a chance to compete. I don't see why players shouldn't have that same right, but it's going to change the landscape for freshmen.
You know, the last question I have for you, Jay, is Chris Beard got a job at Ole Miss. Are you surprised he rebounded and got a job, a Power 5 job that quickly? And how long do you think it takes for him to get Ole Miss in the tournament and make an impact?
Well, am I surprised? No, I'm not surprised anymore. This is big business, and I think the administrators out there, the NCAA personnel, they talk a good game about integrity and doing the things the right way and all that. And I like Chris very much, but you know, maybe 25, 30 years ago, things that are overlooked now wouldn't have been overlooked. You know, these programs want to win more than anything. And so we've seen, you know, Will Wade just got hired, things like that, where it might've been disqualifying years ago. And no, that's no longer the case. I don't doubt Chris Beard's going to have Ole Miss competitive right away, especially with the portal. You know, you get in the portal and recruit some really good players. It's a tough league, but he just came from a tough league. He can coach anywhere. So I don't have any doubts that he'll do a fantastic job.
Well, Jay, man, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us, dropping a little bit of knowledge on our little podcast. And we look forward to your musings on ESPN, your expert commentary, and say hi to Dickie V for us. We love him.
We will. Thank you very much.
Mix in an app now and then, okay?
Yeah, we'll do that.
Thank you, Jay.
You're good, guys. Thank you.
On Second Thought.
Doug, good stuff from Jay Billis, and but we're about to get even better. We know that the Longhorns are playing Colgate, and we know that the Texas A&M Aggies are playing Penn State. But it's possible that they're going to play. To me, it's probable that they're going to play each other. And anytime we're talking Longhorns and Aggies, we got to bring in our brother, Olin Buchanan, from TexAggs.com to talk about conspiracy theories and why the Aggies got worked like a part-time job by the selection committee. OV, the floor is yours.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a theory. I think it's a factual conspiracy. And quite frankly, I would think the Texas Longhorns would be kind of been out of shape about it too, because as a second, as a two seed, you shouldn't be playing a team that, quite frankly, has the same resume as number three seed Xavier. They've got the same record. A&M has a higher net. Now, A&M does have the two losses back in December and November that were quad four losses, but they've got a win over Alabama, which is number two in the net, Tennessee, which is number four, two wins over Arkansas, which is number 21, two wins over Auburn, which I think is 32, 31. Two wins over Missouri, 31, Missouri maybe 32. And if you look at, say, Xavier, they got a nice win over number eight, Connecticut, and number 17, Creighton. But then it kind of falls off after that. So I think the committee said, hey, how are we going to put Texas and A&M together? There's no way that they could put Texas on less than a two seed. You just can't do it. And they could say, hey, A&M lost to Wofford 2 months ago, so let's make them a seven seed. Who cares what they've done since then? And, Kentucky.
9-4 OB.
Kentucky is a six seed. Now, they did beat A&M in Lexington, but A&M finished three, maybe four games ahead of them in the SEC standings, and I think has a better record, and went further in the SEC tournament. But
I can't even get a word in. Is this the way it's going to be when we're all in the SEC together?
Absolutely. But they don't care about Kentucky and Texas in the second round.
No, they don't.
I agree with you guys. I think you shouldn't even consider November and December unless you played, and you beat a number one, a number two, number three, something like that. I mean, who cares if A&M lost to Wofford? Who really cares if they lost to them? They're one of the hottest teams in the country. And to address your point, do you think the committee, I understand eight members of the committee were on it last year when A&M got left out.
Ooh.
Do you think they kind of punished A&M by putting their seed, underseeding them, and giving them Texas in the second round?
Well, I would like to think that's an exact distinct possibility, but they showed their incompetence last year. So why would they be that much more competent this year? Plus, Greg Byrne, the Alabama athletic director, was the SEC representative on the committee. You know who his dad is?
Bill Byrne.
You know where he got fired from?
A&M.
I think I do.
I'm not saying. Yeah. I'm
Bill Byrne.
Just saying.
Bill Byrne, who was part of the greatest exit interview in the history of college football, Coach Fran. With the walk-off resignation right in the middle of a Bill Byrne statement, I'll never forget it. Oh, that was gold. That was gold.
But you know what? I was talking to Wade Taylor about it. I was in Nashville, and so went to their watch party. And, he said, once you start playing, seasons doesn't matter. And then he said, right. I asked him about playing Texas in the second round. He said, all I know is we're playing – Penn State. And then he said, but I guess if it comes to that, it'd be a great story, but that's for another day.
We hope it's for a day. We hope it's for a day this week. So where would you put the Aggies? Should they be a six, a five seed, a four seed? They're second in the league to Alabama.
I would have had them at least a 5 seed. I think if they had beaten Alabama a second time, then they could have been a 4. But to me, a 5 made sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not on the committee.
And considering how good they have played, what are they, 19-4?
19-4.
Right. You think they're –
Here's the thing that you were talking about not putting too much into a December loss. I think you might see a lot of teams. You're seeing Penn State playing better late. Because especially this year, like an A&M situation. I don't mean to be making excuses for them, but let's consider the facts. A&M's team is made up of transfer, Boots Radford. Of course, he was here last year. Transfer Henry Coleman, who was here last year. Transfer Dexter Dennis, who came in this year from Wichita State. Transfer Julius Marble, who came in from Michigan State. Transfer, Anderson Garcia, who came in from Mississippi State. And then some freshmen like Solomon Washington that play a lot. And I think that now with the transfers so prevalent that you might see some teams, especially if they do some unorthodox things like Buzz Williams, take them a little bit longer to get chemistry into gel and things like that. And if you're going to punish them, okay, but you might end up having to punish a lot of teams.
Oh, yeah.
They may not do it unless they have an arch rival looming in the second round.
Well, I'm going to tell
you. Rivals? I didn't know they were rivals anymore.
Yeah, we were at
the – come on, as much as you guys whined about not playing football, and now you're going to sit for the last 5 years, they're going to say, oh, I didn't know we were rivals.
Tongue-in-cheek. He didn't understand tongue-in-cheek at College Station.
We're both on the Bellina show every week.
And I know.
We've been blowing that trumpet for years. Me and Louie been wanting to get these guys back together for the longest. But we were at Moody Center during the selection show. And we saw that 7-10 A&M Penn State. And the first thing I thought, A&M's a 7? What the heck? What is that about? And then I looked down, and there was a 2 and a 15. I go, duck.
You knew it.
I knew. I was like, oh, they're not going to do this. The press row went nuts.
Well, they did it in 2016 in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
And, of course, it didn't work out.
Northern Iowa, wasn't it?
Northern Iowa, just about, I guess, 15 miles from where I am right now.
The only reason I know who Paul Jesperson is, 60-footer.
But it just shows how, to me, and I'm sure y'all agree, possible matchup shouldn't even factor in. You should just – you got to go by the numbers, and whatever the numbers say, go. Mm-hmm. Again, like I said, I think Texas A&M looks at it as, okay, there was some disrespect. Maybe that gives them some fuel, right? But and I'm not saying A&M will beat Texas. I'm not saying Texas will beat A&M. I'd say it's a good game. But if I'm Texas, I'm looking up there and I'm going, how is it? I mean, anybody except that follows college basketball, except on that committee, is saying, I mean, even people like Joe Lunardi, who's forever been a critic of A&M, is saying, oh man, these guys should have been a 5. And what? So if
I got to ask you this. Do we agree that Texas is probably the best 2 seed?
I think so.
So if they're the best 2 seed, I know UCLA's in that mix.
Texas and Arizona's damn good.
And Arizona's good. If they're the best 2 seed, they shouldn't be playing the best 7 seed.
What's Texas's record?
23-8, Doug. Is that right?
In the Big 12, the best conference in the country. And you're going to tell me Arizona out of the lane, Pac-12, is a
– No, they lost 7 games. They were 1 game behind Kansas, who they trounced twice in 8 days. So, I know. It doesn't make much sense. And I would say, the strength of A&M is its guards, right, with Wade Taylor and Radford, part of the strength of the A&M team and their defense.
Yeah, and I would throw in, Dexter Dennis. I think he might be – he didn't make the All-SEC defensive team, and that's a travesty too. He may be the best defensive player. He was the American Conference defense player of the year last year at Wichita State.
Mm-hmm. But they're not a great shooting A&M team, are they?
They're streaky.
Yeah.
They're great shooting at the free throw line.
Just like Texas.
Those Texans. Texas is a great free throw. A&M may be the best in the country, right?
I think so. I think they shoot the most and have made the most.
Yeah.
You know what? That's a big time. That's a big time weapon in a tournament situation. Texas 26-8, by the way, OB.
Right.
26-8.
I just hope it happens, and I'm hope I'm sitting next to you.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun, like the old days.
Could be some fisticuffs, right?
I'll be saying, we're going to beat y'all.
Rose Bowl's better. Oh, well.
So what would you say the Aggies' Achilles heel is, other than maybe shooting streakiness?
Well, I think that is they have a tendency, because they don't have they just don't seem to have that guy that when you – as good as Taylor is, when you absolutely have to have a basket.
Yeah.
So sometimes they go into a prolonged stretches without field goal. Against Alabama, I think it was. I think they went 10 and a half minutes without a field goal.
Yeah, I think that's right.
They were still in the game. They were only down by 10 at the time and had the ball with a chance to get to 8. But you can't go against anybody 10 and a half minutes without a field goal. Now, they got some free throws in there. So I would say that's it. They don't have a ton of length. Julius Marble, 6'9", allegedly. Henry Coleman, 6'8", allegedly. But they don't have a ton.
Texas is undersized as well.
Yeah.
I hope it happens. It's going to be a guards paradise. And that's going to be a game where it could be one of those 84-83 type games that we used to.
A&M doesn't want to play that way. You know, that their first thing is defense. What they want to do is they want to shoot three.
Yeah.
Which is going to be interesting as Penn State, because that's what Penn State wants to do. And when I've watched Texas, and obviously I haven't watched Texas a lot this year, but it seems like they shoot the three pretty well.
They can be streaky too, but Jabari Rice is excellent. Marcus Carr's been really good. Tyrese Hunter has gotten better. You know, the transfer. He's gotten a lot better. And how would you size up the Penn State matchup? I know they have Jalen Pinkett with the Nittany Lions. He's their do everything guy, and they got hot and finished second in the Big Ten title game.
And you don't ever want to dismiss your opponent, right? But I look at the Big Ten. And everybody seems the same.
It seems so, like other than Purdue.
You got Purdue, and then everybody else is about, what, finishing within a game of each other, except for the bottom teams. Look, it looks to me that, you know, they're very guard-oriented, shoot the three a lot. I think they're fourth in the country in three-pointers made per game. I think, like, averaging 11 or 10.8. I think they actually average giving up more points than the average scoring. I think it's like 72 they allow and 68. But I guess what I come back to is I don't know about the company you're keeping. What do you think about Big Ten basketball this year?
I think
A&M's more athletic.
They are.
But any team that can shoot the ball can give you some trouble. You know, Vanderbilt. Not a great team, but they can shoot the basketball, and they gave A&M some trouble in College Station.
Yeah, they're not really a superstar team. I think Alabama is the best team on paper, but I think there's not that superstar team like, you know, we've seen in the past. And it helps being an old team, like you said.
Alabama can shoot.
Penn State's got 5 seniors. You know, Texas has 6 seniors, and that's a good thing to have in March, I think. So
they're also good about getting other people shots.
Yeah. Oh, they say you had to go there, didn't you?
What?
There was a couple of idiots in Nashville. I mean, there were more than that, but there was a couple of specific idiots in Nashville. Alabama fans walking around. Maybe you saw the picture. Walking around with T-shirts that said Alabama killing it in the SEC this
brutal.
Year.
Just brutal. Right.
And they were banned from the arena.
You show back up, you're not going to be let in. Right. They said they were Alabama fans, but you know they weren't. You know they weren't.
Oh, I think they were.
Well, they were banned. That's even worse.
And you guys think you know Alabama fans. You'll find out in a year.
Oh, man.
Or sooner, so So, hey, do you got a Final Four? Do you fill out a bracket?
You know what? I haven't filled out a bracket yet. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay. I think Alabama's going to be in the Final Four. I'll say that. And probably Kansas. Even though I think Kansas might have a sneaky game if they play Arkansas. Arkansas should be so much better than they are.
They're just all over the place.
They've overcome those. Nick Smith is back. I mean, they got talent like crazy. And then they just – there's undisciplined and they lose. But
They skits out. They do. I've seen two or three of their games.
Look, I wouldn't be surprised. Call me homerific if you want to. I wouldn't be surprised if that alleged second-round game we're talking about
produces a Final Four.
Determine who gets in. Because I can see either team beating Xavier if that's who they play in the Elite Eight round. And who knows what's going on with UH with
Marcus Sasser with that groin. Yeah.
Right. They could be failed by a groin injury.
Groin.
I know you got dinner plans and your time is valuable, but can I ask you a football question?
No, not football.
No, Jimbo. Jimbo, how hot is his seat and how many games he got to win next year to keep his job?
Word five.
I think the seat's pretty warm. Mm-hmm. I've talked to some rich guys, of which unfortunately I'm not one of them. And allegedly, they've got the money if they decide to buy him out.
Allegedly, no doubt about that.
They've got it pledged, right? You've heard that too.
Oh yeah.
I think. Here's what I think he has to do. I think he has to win 9 to feel secure. Ooh, but I don't think
that's
9.
That's a lot of wins.
You know what? If they had scored 1 touchdown a game more, 1, they're 10-2. So, and I think he was highly encouraged to bring in an offense coordinator. Quite frankly, I like the hire of Bobby Petrino. He's not the nicest guy in the world, but he can coach offense.
Yes.
But there's no Devon Achane.
Nope.
So,
Smith is back.
Naismith, the receivers are as good as anybody in the conference. And I really like Connor Wigman. Their offensive line has to play better. Their defensive front will be better because they'll be older. Their linebackers were atrocious last year. They got to be better against the run. But I still think 9 wins is not only a possibility. That should be considered a conservative goal. I mean –
I think you're right.
You brought him in to win championships or at least have those 10-win seasons, and he's had the equivalent of 1. I think 9-1 in 2020 is equivalent to a championship type season. Yeah. But you don't pay a guy $10 million to
go 8-4.
To have one of those seasons in 6 years, because this will be the 6th. So I think there's going to be some pressure, and I think I saw some of that pressure mounting even as last year when he tried to tell us that beating UMass 20-3 was a good win.
Oh,
and I called him on that, and he didn't like it. But you know,
again, that was not a Julius Erving playing for UMass.
Now, if he would have said that the next week that win over LSU was a good win, everybody said yeah.
Okay. I'll take that one.
I think he's got a warm seat that will get exponentially. I'm sorry, I'm trying to use these Kurt Bowles big words. And I messed them up. Trying to get a whole lot hotter, each week or each time they lose.
Oh man!
Glad you gave us our football fix.
If they lose,
who knows?
I'm not saying they're going to win them all, but I'm saying. If they lose, you know, that Alabama Crimson Tide, that's not going to be Will Anderson out there. And that's not Bryce Young. No. And there's a few other guys. Yeah. But, you know, they just reload.
They do. We know that.
They will reload. They
How
always.
Close were they last year to losing 5 games?
They should have lost.
But they only lost 2 on the last play of each game, too. So,
and I think Arkansas had them in trouble as well.
Yeah, if Texas doesn't come in hot on that blitz, they beat Alabama. They beat
I'd probably don't let any Aggie say this because I'd probably be in you know bad standing there. But or if some officials would call an obvious pass interference, I mean safety.
There you go.
Hey, you guys are going to have fun dealing with the Alabama folks and the Alabama media when you get when you come on over.
You mean when Texas comes in and runs things?
We're just trying to get there.
Just wait.
Just trying to get there, OB. Just trying to put one foot in front of the other. We work in the newspaper business.
Y'all'd already be there if Oklahoma wasn't so broke, right?
Exactly.
Damn Sooners.
Yes, carrying their water. Carrying that water.
Go fill out your bracket. Thanks for the wisdom.
I'm going to send you a link to a pool we're in, Kevin Lytle. $10.
All right, I'll fill it out. Do you have to get tonight's games in there?
No.
Okay.
No, it's due by tomorrow morning, so fill it out tonight.
When am I going to see Kurt Bowles in Des Moines, Iowa?
Hopefully noon tomorrow.
Well, this thing drops on Thursday, so hopefully he's probably there at an extended stay. Yeah.
I'll see you then, Granddad.
All righty, buddy.
Thank you, OB. Love you, brother.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate you.
What a great podcast today, all over the NCAA tournament with the incomparable Jay Billis of ESPN.com, all over a potential A&M Texas matchup in round two with our brother Olin Buchanan of TexAgs.com. We are going to get after this tournament, and we're going to cover every nook and cranny that we can. Check out our stuff on Hook'em.com. For the Duck, Kirk Bowles, we thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.